Chapter 13, Hardy's View on Society. Hardy makes society responsible for much of the sorrow and suffering in the world. In the natural state, man is free from many of these evils. Use and wants human conventions and man-made laws are in conflict with the laws of nature. One of the principles of these social laws is that which places a ban on the unmarried woman who has by chance become the mother of child. She is socially regarded as ruined, but where is the ruins from the point of view of nature? She had but fulfilled the physical function of nature, albeit against her will. Her consciousness of having violated a moral law is only due to her being in a social atmosphere. What she believed to be the voice of conscience was really an echo of the social convention and the mistaken creation of her fancy, a cloud of moral hobgoblins, which she was terrified without reason. She had been made to break a necessary social law, but no law known to nature. She had no innate sensations of guilt at the thought of her unmarried motherhood upon a desert island far from thought of unmarried motherhood upon a desert island far from the society she would have taken pleasure in it. But for public opinion, her reduction and her motherhood would have been only a liberal education. Hardy thinks that if all organic nature is full of recuperative power, maidenhood cannot be an exception to the rare. If society did one great harm to Tess by creating in her a sense of imaginary scene, it did much great injury to her by making Angel Claire, its blind instrument individual, have to suffer for the collective timidity of society. The rough and ready judgment of society implanted in her bosom and acting upon her through other people wasted her youth, her beauty, her motherhood, her love, her power of enjoying and spreading joy, drove her to misery, crime, and violent death. Nature but for society would have helped Tess to live without her humiliation, regain her spirits and again look about her with an interested eye. While there's life, there's hope is a conviction not so entirely unknown to the betrayed as some amiable theorists would have us believe. Tess's spirits were for a time revived by nature, and she did try to walk with her head erect, but it was for a short society typified by her lover and husband. Nature makes no distinction between a bastard and a legitimate child. So far as her gifts are concerned, in The Mayor of the Casterbridge, Hardy says, it was an old sequence that out of all these wrongings of social law came that flower of nature, Elizabeth Jane. Life is full of contrarious inconsistencies, and nature has a jaunty readiness to support unorthodox social principles. Hardy repeatedly demonstrates that the sexual impulse or appetite for joy is more powerful than any social restrictions or moral scruples and qualms of conscience. Describing Tess consenting to marry Angel Claire, he says, she had consented, she might as well have agreed at first. The appetite for joy which pervades all creation, that tremendous force which sways humanity to its purpose as a tide sway the helpless weed, was to be controlled by vague lucubrations over the social Rubik. Hardy thinks that it is futile to try to check his nature appetite by categorical rules. Rather, it is the part of wisdom to guide when possible and wink at it other times. So far about Hardy's attitude towards the question of chastity and sex relations, his views are equally pronounced about the institution of marriage. True marriage is union of hearts, and when the hearts have separated, let nobody to be held together by artificial rules. Rites and ceremonies cannot bind hearts together. The question is discussed by Hardy exhaustively in Jude and Obscure. Hardy is opposed to marriage as a permanent bond between persons. He says lives are ruined by the fundamental errors of the matrimonial union, a permanent contract based upon a temporary feeling which has no necessary connection with affinities that alone render a lifelong comradeship tolerable. In another place he says, if a marriage ceremony is a religious thing, it is possibly wrong if it is only a sordid contract based on the material convenience in householding, rating and taxing, and the inheritance of land and money by children, making it necessary that the male parent should be known, which it seems to be. Why surely a person may say, even proclaim up the housetops, that it hurts and grieves him or her. Again, it is culpable to bind oneself to love always, to believe a creed always, as to woe always, to like a particular food or drink. Hardy pleads for as much generosity and indulgence towards a man who has been trapped into a foolish marriage as of a woman who has been technically deprived of her chastity. He says there is something wrong in a social ritual which makes necessary a cancelling of well-formed scheme of contributing one's unit of a monetary surprise by a new and transitory instinct which had nothing of the nature of vice, and which could be only at the most called weakness. One may inquire what the man has won or the woman lost that he deserved to be caught in a game which would cripple him, if not her also, for the rest of a lifetime.